The call to universal holiness has never left the church.
Right.
But the thing Lumen Gentium does is emphasize, or I might say re-emphasize, that role that was seen in the early church. When we see the most impactful in spreading the faith was the actions of the laity.
All right, and we are back. I am the Doc, Thaddeus Romanski, and
I am the Deacon, Michael Beauvais.
And you're listening to the Deacon and the Doc podcast. That's right. This is that little extra bonus that you get as a member of the Vatican II document study class, and where we kind of look back on the previous meetings and look forward to the next meeting.
And we hope that you find this helpful as an addition to the discussions in the class, because it allows us to hear a little bit what other people in the other sections perhaps found most interesting or most insightful.
Sort of a little bit of unity and diversity, you're sort of saying, huh?
Exactly. And if anything, that's an apt description of the Catholic faith as a whole.
Indeed, indeed. Now, Deacon Mike, you said you guys had a really great discussion last night, Tuesday. We're recording on a Wednesday afternoon. It just so happens that we both felt like today's gospel reading in Mass was really apropos to kicking things off today, huh?
Yes, because in the section of Lumen Gentium that we were looking at in this section, we spoke a lot about the role of the church, the role of a bishop, the role of a priest, the role of a deacon, and the role of the laity.
Right.
And it seemed to come as a bit of a surprise to the people in the class that the church emphasizes so much that it's the role of the laity to make the world holy.
Now, great. Let me stop you right there. Now, give the listeners some insight as to why maybe you think your particular class was so surprised to read that chapter 4 in Lumen Gentium on the laity.
Well, I think especially coming out of the church as it was perceived during pre-Vatican II, the understanding was that the church was more the clergy than it was the laity.
Right.
And there used to be this saying, you know, all the laity was expected was to pray, pay, and obey.
Kind of a cynical. It was a
very cynical view of it, because that was never, of course, true, because the call to universal holiness has never left the church.
Right.
But the thing Lumen Gentium does is emphasize, or I might say re-emphasize, that role that was seen in the early church. When we see the beginnings of the church as it figured out what the role was of the church, the most impactful in spreading the faith was the actions of the laity.
Right.
Picking up the orphans in the streets and taking care of them, taking care of the sick, taking care of the orphans, loving our neighbor.
Yeah, let's pause there on that piece of the orphans. You know, in Roman society, in pagan Roman society, orphans or children that were unwanted, if the paterfamilias, the head of the household, decided that we don't have enough resources to care for this child, exposure was their fate. That was that they were put out into the wilderness, put out on a mountaintop, and just left there to die. And the Christians saved many, many children, orphans, from exposure.
And the thing I find so fascinating is that the majority of the orphans would have been girls, because boys would have been of value to the family.
That's right.
Girls, not so much.
Right.
And so, especially in our society, which tends to frown on the church as being anti-female, the origins are the opposite of that. The fact that the church valued everyone equally.
Right.
And so, again, that whole loving our neighbor extended to the infant, to the aged, to everyone in between. And so that call in Lumen Gentium to sanctify the world around us, this is what we're talking about. How do we go out in the world and show love for neighbor where people notice.
Right. So it was the actions of the laity in the very early church, in the ancient church, that sparked so many conversions and that made pagan Romans and pagan Greeks turn their head and say, famously, look how they love one another.
Exactly.
Look how they love. Right? There's not enough priests and deacons and bishops to be doing all that. It's the laity operating that way.
And as we mentioned, that, you know, the documents of Vatican II, one of the biggest misunderstandings is that it wanted to modernize things. And in some aspects that might be true, but the major intent of Vatican II was to recapture what the church has always been, mm-hmm. and emphasize those things that made the church the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so the clarifications of the role of the bishop, the role of the priest, the role of the deacon was intended to see, to show this is what the church has always been.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, this is just occurring to me now. You talk about modernizing the church, that charge that it modernized the church. Well, in a sense, this call to universal call to holiness and the highlighting the role of the laity again, it was modernizing it. But it was modernizing it by going back to its origins. And here's what I'm thinking about. Vatican II is called after several centuries of world history and European history, especially where it's no longer Christendom is breaking down. That idea of this being a thoroughgoing Christian society that is existing and operating is breaking down more and more. And you are starting to get increasingly societies where the mainstream society is operating according to values that are hollowed out Christian values. They're twisted versions of what used to be Christian values, even anti-Christian values, arguably in places like Soviet Russia, Nazi Germany, Communist China. And so the church, by calling out and saying the laity has to assume a greater role, and they have this universal call to holiness, it is actually saying, here's how we're going to adapt ourselves to this modern situation. Here's how we're going to meet the modern world by encouraging Catholic lay faithful to live out their Christian convictions in the society, in a society where increasingly a priest or a bishop or a cleric doesn't have the same kind of ability to reach and influence events, influence the culture, influence the society.
Which is fascinating to me, because if you look at the documents that led to Lumen Gentium, especially the desire to reinstitute the permanent diaconate.
Mm-hmm. I knew you were going to get that in here today.
But it goes so well with what you were just saying. The reason for that came from the bishops in Germany, who thought had there been clergy out in the midst of the laity to provide examples for how to live out our call to universal holiness, that perhaps the apathy that was seen in the people in Germany to what was going on could have been avoided. And so, again, the call for the permanent diaconate was for exactly the same reason, and namely to bring holiness out into the secular world.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to see even more, we're going to return and see kind of a more fleshed out explanation of what that universal call to holiness and the role of the laity is supposed to be in society. When we get towards the end of the class, we get to Gaudium et Spes.
Right.
Right. The church in the modern world, the constitution on the church in the modern world. But it starts here in Lumen Gentium with this idea of the universal call to holiness. Yeah. Talk a little bit more about how it might have been easy to think that the church was the clergy in the pre-Vatican II era, and how that's not really the case.
Well, and in order to see how that came about, you have to understand that the church basically took on an authoritative role when the Roman Empire fell.
Exactly.
And so, especially throughout the age where government was almost always a kingdom, mm-hmm. there was this notion that you had a king. That's where the term princes of the church came from. Mm-hmm. So the Pope was more seen as a king mm-hmm. than as a servant.
Right.
And so that notion became, well, we just follow whatever they do. And this is where that cynical pray, pay, and obey thing was.
Right.
But that was never the intent of the church. It was a sad result of a vacuum in authority with the fall of the Roman Empire, just that happened to have been filled by the church.
Yeah, yeah.
And so again, Vatican II's desire was, given all the changes that were occurring civilly, mm-hmm. how do we clarify that role of the laity, even though it wasn't acted on, has always been the call of the church.
Now, what are you, we're just dishing here, and these are our own personal opinions here. What do you think are some ways that role of the laity that's laid out in chapter 4 kind of has yet to be realized? What are some kind of steps that still need to be taken in order to make that more of a reality?
Well, I think we've gotten to the point where, given the culture's disdain for religion, people are afraid of voicing their mm-hmm. faith out loud. Mm-hmm. And so this is certainly one thing that we would need to get away from and be more assertive in not trying to proselytize, but not being afraid of stating that we are Christians. Mm-hmm. And that the actions we take, which of course then must mirror what it is to be a Christian, those we take because we are Christians, because that's what our identity is. Mm-hmm. And so this is there was a discussion in Lumen Gentium also about virtue. And that's what is required, is virtue. And as St. Thomas tells us, virtue is an habitual action aimed towards the good. And what he means by that is, you know, last night in the class, we were talking about, you know, faith is a virtue. But if I'm only faithful 50% of the time, how's your marriage going to work out? And is that a virtue? And so the thing is, what St. Thomas tells us is that those virtues must be who we are, that we do them because that's who we are, not because we're just wanting to appear virtuous. It has to be who we are. And that, again, if we're going to be Christians in the world and be the light of the world, first thing that's required is virtuous lives.
Yeah, so personal holiness, personal fidelity, personal faith, personal hope, personal sacrifice for the other, putting ourselves second, deepening our lives of prayer, knowing Christ more deeply, imitating him.
And as Lumen Gentium says, it's all about love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Loving neighbor, loving God.
Right. Now, I also think that there's a need for the church to talk more about persecution. I think we need to talk more about, as a church, both from the pulpit and within our circles of the laity, about facing persecution and being willing to endure persecution, whether it's, God forbid, red martyrdom, but white martyrdom, being shunned for standing up for the good, the true, and the beautiful, losing out on a promotion, losing out on a job, losing out on all manner of worldly honor, power, because we're going to stand for what's right. We're going to stand for the truth. We're going to live out in a real way our Christian convictions. What do you think about that?
Well, it was one of the things I mentioned in a homily one time, just as an aside, that, you know, there are people that die for their faith, and we're afraid to lose friends on Facebook.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is what our faith calls us to be honest about our faith and this all aspects of our life, and that includes what we post online.
Yeah, and I'm saying that from, I need to be more willing to do that. I'm not saying that I've perfected that and all of y'all get on board, but I see that in my own self, that I need that. I was really taken with that quote. We both noted it in the excerpt from Pope Benedict the 16th, Deus Caritas Est, one of his encyclicals. He talked about that the mission of the lay faithful is to configure social life correctly. And when I read that, I stopped and I thought about configuring things. You know, that's constructing, laying out, planning things, arranging things to a particular plan, that's what the lay faithful are supposed to do. We're supposed to have that kind of effect on the societies in which we live in. I think we're falling short.
Well, when I read that, one of the things I thought is, you know, it sounds complicated, but it really isn't. Hmm. Say, for instance, we're going on vacation with family members.
Yep.
And we're planning what we're going to do. Are we willing to say, well, at 9:30 on Sunday morning,
yep,
we are going to Mass?
Yep.
So whatever we're planning has to fit
right
around that.
Right.
That's configuring our social life to our faith.
Right.
And so, you know, this is simple as that. You know, you're invited to a party. Well, I'm going to be late because we have Stations of the Cross.
Yep.
It's, of course, you shouldn't be going to a party during Lent anyway, but that's beside the point. But those sort of things, configuring our lives around our faith, not configuring our faith around our lives. Where I'm sorry, I can't make it to Mass because I have this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, that's looking at it backwards.
So more and more having all the choices that we make be reflective of the true, the good, and the beautiful, our love of God, our love of neighbor.
That's what Pope Benedict is saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's turn a little bit as we wrap up here to... maybe that's in the spirit of Lumen Gentium. Now we'll turn to talk about the bishops and the clergy. What are some things that stood out to you or that were discussion points about the, you know, chapter 3 on the bishops?
Well, the most difficult thing, I think, for people to grasp is what it means to be obedient to your bishop if he's not speaking infallibly. And bishops almost never speak infallibly.
Right.
It is only when they're in communion with the Pope and speak as a whole.
Right. But number 33, as we discussed, says that they're still nevertheless due respect. Right.
Exactly. And so whatever the bishop says is due our tacit acknowledgement of his authority.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does that look like? Well, our discussion last night, we took up the example of immigration. And we know what the church's position on immigration is. We hear it all the time from the bishops, and I always hear people saying, well, I disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is, one, we should not disagree with our bishops on matters of faith and morals. But the other thing is, it's usually a matter of a flawed perspective. I can hold the position that a government needs to do certain things to have a workable, just immigration policy.
Mm-hmm.
And in my political life, I would vote to go with that.
Right.
But the bishop's perspective isn't from a political standpoint. The bishop's perspective is from a Christian moral standpoint.
Right.
And Jesus doesn't say, ask where they come from. Jesus says, love your neighbor.
Right.
And this is why he used the example of the Good Samaritan, two people that would never even speak to each other.
Right.
And the call is that from when the bishops tell us our Christian stance of immigration. It is not a political issue. It is not a secular issue. When the bishops speak, it is a Christian issue. And that issue is, how do I love the person standing in front of me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so everything that the bishops say about immigration has to be weighed in that view.
Mm-hmm.
What is he telling me about loving that person that comes in front of me? I have no control over what the politics of the country are. I can vote, but no one's going to ask, go down there and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can fix the issues of the person standing in front of me who needs help one way or the other.
I think you're right, and that nature abhors a vacuum. You know that saying, well, if the church doesn't stand in that space and make a moral claim on what we should do as human beings and set a moral standard for conduct from a particular anthropology and from a particular theology, well, some voice is going to fill that space from maybe a very noxious ideology, maybe a very abhorrent anthropology, but there's still going to be some voice or a collection of voices that's going to be making that kind of a case and being the moral voice for any given society. That's a fact of human life. So we very much want and need the church to be that moral clarion call for us.
And I find it interesting, there was a quote by G.K. Chesterton I just came across recently where he said, I don't need a church to tell me when I'm right.
Right, exactly.
I need a church that tells me I'm wrong when I think I'm right.
Right.
And this is exactly what we're talking about. When we're so convinced that, you know, our position is correct and the bishop's position is wrong, that's why we need the church.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, in matters of faith and morals, it is not our opinion that matters. It is the guidance of the Holy Spirit that matters, and he works through the hierarchy of the church.
Right. I think the kind of as an addendum to that, and we're going long, I realize, but the other thing we really hit on with the Lumen Gentium and the role of the bishops is it started to feel like it was hitting me over the head with this idea, but constantly, the role of the bishops is to teach, to shepherd, to guide, not to be administrative functionaries. And I think, sadly, there's too much of that on our bishops' plates. And
Yes. That's
something else the church needs to take a hard look at, is how can we configure things to allow our bishops to carry out this role of being teachers and preachers and shepherds?
And I think this, again, is because of the incursion of the secular world into the religious.
Mm-hmm.
Tax matters, property matters, all these things that are lawsuits, all these things, scandals, all these things that...
Because we're not living lives of personal holiness.
Exactly. But all of this takes up the time of the bishop.
Yep.
And keeps him from being the shepherd that he wants to be. And trust me, there's not a bishop out there that does not want to be a shepherd to his people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so again, you know, is there an answer to this? I certainly hope so. But is it easy?
No.
Definitely not.
No. So we close by asking all of y'all to pray for our bishops, pray for our Pope, and make sure that you take time out this Friday at some point to join your prayers with our Holy Father in consecrating Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary.
Yes, and the prayer can be found online, so you can pray it with the church or you can pray it by yourself for the church.
All right. Well, you've been listening to another episode of The Deacon and the Doc. They just keep getting longer, but I hope that's okay.
Well, you can stop listening anytime you want to, but we ask you not to.
All right. So long. Thanks, Deacon.
Thank you, Thaddeus.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Deacon and the Doc podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please consider going to redsearadio.org/donate and supporting religious education for the domestic church.